Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Embodied Nourishment Podcast. I know it has been a while. I released the last episode back in October, and then winter happened, and I just like straight up went into a hibernation. But we have changed the clocks, and the days are getting longer, and the sun is out, and the birds are singing, and it's the first day of Aries season. So, and the second day of spring. So I'm back. I am out of hibernation and I have new thoughts and ideas that I need to put onto a podcast episode. So today I am going to be talking about if you have been on this intuitive eating journey, this non-diet, ditching the diet, trying to listen to your body, trust your body, etc. journey for longer than 6 months, and you still feel like your relationship with food sucks, I am going to tell you why. And hopefully by the end of this episode, I will give you some tips and tricks on how to snap out of that and really start to enjoy the benefits of intuitive eating and just trusting yourself. Okay, so here's the thing. I know that if you have been consuming all of the content on social media and listening to all of the podcasts about why diets are awful and why they don't work, and you know, there is so much nutrition misinformation out there about, you know, carbs being bad or fats being bad, or why, you know, like why all of those claims are false and why carbs are actually nutritious and sugar is not inherently bad for you, and we do need dietary fats, and you know, all things non-diet, anti-diet, pro-nourishment, pro-trusting your body. If you have been consuming all of that content and you have been sitting there like, yes, I love this. This sounds like it feels so good and it makes so much sense and logically I understand it and I want this for myself. I want to believe these things. I want to have a good relationship with food. And it's still just like not happening. If you're still like kind of battling with yourself and fighting these demons in your head and not feeling that peace and that ease that you so desperately want with your relationship with food, the reason why it's not clicking for you is because if deep down, anywhere inside of you, anywhere underneath all of that, you know, the gunk and the fluff, if there's any part of you at all that still believes that carbs maybe aren't so good for you, or you shouldn't be eating more than 1,800 calories a day, or I don't know, foods that are fried and have saturated fats are so unhealthy and should be avoided at all costs, or if sugar is so bad, or whatever your food rules are, whatever they were, if there's any part of you deep down that still believes any of the misinformation to your core, even though up like consciously, logically in your brain, in your, you know, your thinking brain, you're like, oh yeah, I understand why like that is misinformation. But if deep down you still believe it's true for yourself, you're never going to have peace with food. Deep down, if those thoughts and beliefs and rules are still there, they're going to be the ones running the show. Even if you say you don't want them to. And that's the thing, right? So like when we hear about intuitive eating and we hear these non-diet, anti-diet messages, they're very ideal. They're very idealistic, right? Ideally, you know, you could have this peace with food where you're not thinking about food all the time and you trust your body and you know nutrition is good for you and carbs are good for you. And if you just embrace that life, you can have that peace that you're looking for and that connection with your body and trusting those hunger, fullness cues, etc. That's the ideal. It's very idealistic. And you know, yeah, like while it's good to, I'm not saying to like not consume the content, because definitely like the more times you see a message, you hear a message, it pulls you closer and closer to that direction. It does pull you there. And even if you feel like your relationship with food is not where you want it to be right now, you can get there. And I'm going to tell you how you can move through these blocks in just a short bit. But I want to say that intuitive eating or being an intuitive eater is, I guess you could say, the end goal. But for a lot of people, the principles of intuitive eating are not necessarily the means to get there. So I'll explain in different words. So for example, the methodologies that I use for a lot of my clients actually involves quite a bit of structure, which I know, like, you know, if we're looking at the intuitive eating book or we're listening to like non-diet eating disorder recovery messages on social media, a lot of that messaging is to like ditch the structure, ditch the counting calories, ditch the counting macros, ditch the, you know, et cetera, et cetera. Because a lot of times, yes, those behaviors are characteristic of disordered eating. However, not all the time. In fact, a lot of times, especially in eating disorder recovery, structure and even sometimes calculations, dare I say it, can be incredibly beneficial in the nutrition rehabilitation process. And sometimes, I mean, it's just straight up necessary. Like, okay, let me come out of this topic for just a moment and talk just very briefly about more severe cases of eating disorders where an individual might require a higher level of care, specialized treatment, inpatient treatment, residential, let's say, for example, anorexia and extreme kinds of restrictive behaviors. When an individual goes into a residential treatment to recover from anorexia, it's typically a 6-week program. And let me tell you, they are counting calories. They are measuring out their food. There's measurements, there's counting calories, and all of that is to ensure that nutrition rehabilitation is actually occurring. Somebody with a severe case of anorexia cannot go into a residential treatment and then the providers within that setting say, okay, by the way, all of the counting calories that you were doing and all of the measuring of your food that you're doing was highly disordered, so we're not going to do that at all anymore, and just listen to your body. Just trust yourself. My friends, that is not what happens in eating disorder residential treatment. No way, not at all. It is incredibly structured. They stick to very strict meal times, very strict snack times, very strict portions, and very strict calories. Now, of course, ideally, the end goal of eating disorder treatment is to not be doing these things. But in order to get there, there needs to be some assurance that nutrition needs are being met. There is a nutrition rehabilitation process that needs to occur. So no, like, you know, somebody who's going in for anorexia treatment, they're not eating like the 500 calories that they were maybe eating while they were very active in their eating disorder before treatment. But they might start with 1,500 calories and then move their way up to eventually 1,800 or 2,000 calories. To be honest with you, I'm not entirely sure what the systematic approach is in there, but I know it's something like that, but very structured. And what this does is it helps restore the patient's nutritional status. But ultimately, the biggest thing that it does is, in a very structured, systematic way, it dismantles the person's belief that eating 1,500 calories, eating 1,800 calories, 2,000 calories, whatever these big numbers that were very threatening to the eating disorder, it challenges that directly and dismantles it. And it is facing the fear that was causing the disorder in the first place. It's what's the word for it? Like habituation or no, exposure therapy, right? I guess like in a way we can look at it as like a form of exposure therapy. You know, so the person ideally goes through the 6-week treatment. They are actively challenging these really strict restrictions and food rules that they had, and and it's hard, you know, it's not easy. There's a lot of therapists on deck, and there's a lot of group therapy and eating together and a lot of encouraging this, because it's not a fun process for somebody to go against the eating disorder. It's hard. It's very hard. It's not like a walk in the park at all. But that's why it's a higher level of care, because somebody needs all of that support in order to work through it. So anyway, ideally they go through this 6-week treatment. They are rehabilitated enough to maybe eventually move to outpatient, where they can continue the nutrition therapy and the psychological therapy outside of an inpatient setting, you know, like where they maybe resume, go back to their normal life of working, going to school, and then they can like meet with a dietitian and a therapist outside of, you know, their working life hours or whatever it is. That's like the ideal trajectory. Of course, sometimes people need to stay a little bit longer, or they need to, or if they decline in a setting like that, they have to maybe go like into the hospital for a feeding tube, or, you know, it could go either way. But anyway, typically that residential treatment is the in-between of coming out of the depths of the eating disorder, like the worst parts of the eating disorder, and then moving on to the more free, I guess you can say, aspects of treatment. Now, I know a lot of times I talk about eating disorders occurring on a spectrum, right? So like one far end of the spectrum, we would describe a healthy relationship with food, right? Like people have maybe minimal to no food rules. They're not thinking about food all the time. They're generally in touch with their hunger and fullness cues. They trust their bodies. They're not engaging in disordered eating. And whatever food rules they maybe do have underneath the surface, or whatever misinformation they have internalized, it's not interfering with their quality of life. They're able to have friends. They're able to go out to eat. They're able to hold a job. And their general mental and physical health and well-being is not compromised. Now, on the complete opposite end of the spectrum would be like something I just described, where an eating disorder is negatively impacting both physical and mental health to a point where it is interfering with life, quality of life, and a higher level of care, inpatient treatment is required in order to restore health. So that's the spectrum, right? Those are the two extremes. And then there's everything in between. And I talk a lot about how there's really no, like, I guess, like specific treatment for the people who exist somewhere in between on this spectrum. Like maybe you can hold a job and you have friends and you can go out, but like all day your mind is tormented by your food rules and like maybe this belief that you can only eat 1,800 calories a day. And while 1,800 calories a day is maybe sustaining your life, like it's not super, super, super restrictive, you're still like tormented by it, and it is affecting the way that you're moving through your day. And of course, only you can decide wherever you are on the spectrum. But nonetheless, the treatment, while like maybe you don't require something like a residential inpatient treatment, the methodology to recovering is still somewhat the same. Or at least what I do with my clients and my patients, or the ones who don't require like inpatient residential treatment, I still use some kind of structure to help move them through their food rules in the same way that they do in the inpatient and residential treatment centers. It's obviously not as extreme, but the school of thought, the philosophy of it is the same. It's such a disservice. Like it would be such a disservice if I, you know, signed a new client or started working with a new patient, and I just said to them, like, okay, here's our first session. So all of those disordered food rules and thoughts and beliefs and behaviors you had, just forget about them. We're not going to do them anymore. Just go eat whatever you want and trust your body. And you got this. You're good. All right, go sport. Clap, clap. You got this. Go ahead. No, it doesn't happen like that. It doesn't happen like that. There needs to be some structure. Now, the level of structure that somebody requires is going to be different and somewhat individualized, Well, actually very individualized, not somewhat individualized. But okay, so let me, so I'll say this. So for example, if let's say one of your food rules is that you're only allowed to eat carbohydrates once a day, like, or maybe like you're only allowed to eat bread once or some form of like bread, pasta, potatoes, whatever it is. If you believe that a human being should only be having a serving of that, a kind of carbohydrate like that once per day and never any more than that, and then you try to go into the intuitive eating food freedom space of like, oh, I just want to be free with food, I want to ditch all my food rules, but you still believe that, then you're not going to find the freedom. Even if you, even if like logically you're like, oh yeah, like I understand carbs are not bad for you, but like still somewhere deep down inside yourself, you think that they are for you. If there's any part of you that believes it, then guess what? That belief is going to be running the show. Whether you wish it was or it wasn't, or you think it is or you think it's not, if it's in there somewhere, it's going to be running the show. And if you have not systematically dismantled these food rules, or we'll stick with this example for now, if you have not systematically dismantled that food rule of, oh, I can only eat carbs once a day, then you're not going to find that freedom and that peace. And in fact, it could even be tormenting you even more, right? Because like, maybe this is you, right? I'll give an example of some stories that I've heard that's like, you know, maybe somebody ideally wants to have this freedom, but they're still tormented by the food rule. And because there's this, like still such a strong internal conflict of, I want to be able to eat more carbohydrates versus, but carbohydrates are bad and I shouldn't be doing it because I'm so afraid I'm going to gain weight. If you're constantly battling back and forth between those two things, then you grow more frustrated at the fact that you don't have the freedom that you want. And it's more apparent because you're like really thinking about wanting the freedom and it's not happening. What I see a lot of times happen is this rebellion happens. There's this like, you reach this this upper tolerable limit of frustration with the whole situation that a lot of times I see people are just like, well, fuck it. Like, I don't even care anymore. Let me just eat all of the cupcakes. Or let me eat this entire sleeve of cookie. Or let me eat this, you know, this whole box of six donuts. Because it's like I just can't take it anymore. Like, I just want to be free. So fuck it. Fuck all the rules. I'm going to sit here. I'm going to eat everything because I want to be free. But my friends, like, that is not freedom either. When that happens, that switch, that rebellion, guess what? You are that act of rebellion is still you being controlled by the food rule. And I, side note, I always say rebellion is a virtue, meaning you can have too much rebellion and you can have too little rebellion. And if you like are either too little rebellious or too much rebellious over that fine line of like the perfect amount of rebellion, then guess what? The structures, the authoritarian control and rules and regulations over your life are still controlling you when you're too rebellious or too little rebellious, right? Either way. So it's finding this fine line of, or it's like walking this tightrope of like, what is the right amount of rebellion? Okay. So anyway, going back to that example, right? Like if you are snapping at this, at the point of frustration of not having the freedom that you're looking for, and you say, you get into that fuck it mindset of like, I'm just gonna eat everything. Guess what? That food rule of like carbs are bad are still controlling you when you are eating the whole box of donuts, right? And then this is what happens. So you eat all the things because you're so mad. You're so frustrated. You're like, fuck this, I'm rebelling. And then afterwards, you feel terrible. Like you feel the guilt and the shame of it. And then it goes around and around in this circle of like, oh, see, look, I have no control over carbohydrates. And oh, look at what these carbohydrates are doing to me. And oh, look, they're so bad for me. And around and around and around in this circle you go, starting back at square one. Okay. So if this sounds like you, if this is resonating with you, this is what needs to happen. So what I do with my clients is I, like I said before, I take the school of thought and the school of philosophy from these residential eating disorder treatment centers. And while maybe not being as extreme as them with regards to structure, there needs to be structure. So, for example, staying with the example of this, but this rule that carbs are bad, I'm only allowed to eat them once a day. If that's your rule, then I'll tell, here it is, right? Here is the secret sauce that people pay me for. Okay. This, I'm giving it to you for free right now. What you need is a structure that incorporates carbohydrates 3 to 4 times a day. You need a structure that holds you accountable to a serving of carbohydrates in the morning. Maybe that's 2 slices of toast. Then you also need to be held accountable to another serving of carbohydrate with your lunch. Maybe that's also a cup of rice, for example, as incorporated as part of your whole lunch. And then you also need to be held accountable to, in the same day, a snack, maybe like a granola bar as part of your snack. And then you also need to be held accountable to a dinner time with, let's say, a cup of pasta as part of your dinner. So in one day, you are having 2 slices of bread, a cup of rice, a granola bar, and a cup of pasta, okay? And that needs to happen not just one time, but every day for at least 6 weeks. And I say 6 weeks because there is some truth to this school of thought with these residential treatment centers that it takes at least 6 weeks for your body to start to connect to the way that these nutrients are making you feel, for you to start making the connections to your body, and also to just, again, systematically dismantle and work through that food rule that carbs are bad, right? So every day for 6 weeks, if you're eating carbohydrates like that 4 times a day, and you start to see like, oh, I feel great, actually. I feel so much better. I have energy. I'm not thinking about food all day. I'm no longer binging at night. And wow, like my body is not falling apart or gaining 1 million pounds like I thought it was. Wow, okay. I can now fully see and fully embody for myself, my own self-actualization, that rule was false. And it is completely, thoroughly dismantled. You embody the new information that carbohydrates are good and that you need them in those kinds of amounts. And now this is a step closer to the freedom that you want with intuitive eating. Because now that you have dismantled this thought and this belief and you practiced it and you're not afraid of them anymore, now you can wake up and say, huh, I want carbohydrates. Which kind do I want? Do I want oatmeal or do I want toast? Or do I want, I don't know, a bagel? I don't know what else people eat for breakfast. I can't think right now. Or pancakes, waffles, right? There we go. And then you feeling confident in the decision to pick one of those things as part of your breakfast because you know you need it and you know you feel good on it. And that's how you get to the freedom. You have to, whatever, and you know, whatever your food rule is, you know, maybe it's, I don't know, something else, like fats are bad, right? And we would do the same thing with fats. Now, everybody is coming into their journey of healing from disordered eating, different ways, different beliefs, different structures, different systems, different backgrounds, different upbringings, and this is why coming up with something very individualized, it can really benefit you. So I'm going to give you, and I'm sharing this story with permission. So, so-and-so, if you're listening, you know who you are. This is an actual specific client of mine who I have been using this methodology with. Actually, we've been together now 8 weeks and we have implemented some of these, structured strategies very systematically, and it has been so, so wonderful for her. So I'll tell you right now, like, this is how I start everybody out when they begin working with me. Just very kind of blanket, I suggest for everybody to do, of course, 3 meals and at least one, depending on your life and what you do, maybe 2 snacks per day. And at all of your meals and all of your snacks, doing your best to incorporate proteins, carbohydrates, and fats. So each of my clients, they go on their way, they incorporate this. And then as the weeks go on and we get feedback and information and the food rules come to the surface, we work through them. So for this one particular client, I remember the first food rule was around desserts and feeling the guilt and the shame around the dessert. So I suggested to her, I said, listen, just, you know what? Let's make a rule. Every single night, have a dessert. This way, just to get her out of her head, right? Get her out of her head, because it was, should I have the dessert? Should I not have the dessert? Does it have too much sugar? But how much should I eat today already? Do I have room for this? Is it appropriate? Am I going to, blah, 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 right? Like, I don't have to tell you, right? All the noise, blah, 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 blah. With a structure, it can quiet that noise and just allow you to move through it and, again, systematically work through these things. So I said to her, I said, listen, here, we're going to make a new rule, but this rule is fun. Dessert every night. Just, that's it. Be done with it. Forget about the chatter in your noise, the chatter in your head. I meant to say the noise in your head. But anyway, I said, you know, this will quiet all of that down. And just, you know what, Melissa, your registered dietitian who you hired and you're paying and who you're trusting to move you through this process said dessert every night. So just do it. And let me tell you, within a week, she was like, wow, I'm not afraid of desserts anymore. This was great. Like, it's fine. I know I can have desserts when I need them. I'm not thinking about it anymore. Great. Next thing. Okay. So the next thing that she was struggling with was this, the following. So she was doing a really good job of breakfast and dinner. She was hitting all the components, the protein, carbs, and the fats, and her afternoon snack too. You know, she was most of the time doing, you know, at least 2 of the components really well with breakfast and dinner. Lunch kept getting weird. Like there kept being like these excuses, or maybe not always excuses. I don't want to be too tough with that word, but you know, oh, I got really busy with work, or, you know, I couldn't find the time, the day got away from me. And then when something for lunch did happen, it was like, you know, girl dinner, like that thing going around TikTok where it was just like maybe a handful of snacks, like a cheese stick or an apple or a very small portion of a lunch, or lunch was just weird, right? So I finally looked at her and I said, okay, what's going on here? Like, I'm going to ask you a question and I want you to think about it and be as honest as possible. Is this trouble at lunchtime truly because there's no time and you're really busy? Or are there like some subconscious food rules and thoughts that are getting in the way of you being able to just go in your kitchen and put a substantial meal on your plate? And she thought about it and she said, you know what, Melissa, honestly, I think it's both. So, and that's fair, right? Makes total sense. So she's super duper busy with work. Her work schedule, the day can very easily get away from her. And then at the same time, when she does maybe have a minute for lunch, her brain is flooded with, oh, but I had carbs for breakfast and I'm going to have carbs for dinner. Should I have carbs for lunch too? Or, oh, I had this much for breakfast. Do I really need a whole entire lunch? Right? All the chatter was getting in the way. So this combination of being really busy, not having all the time in the world for lunch, and then when she did find a little pocket of time, her brain just being like onslaught with all of these disordered, restrictive misinformation, food rules, food beliefs, forget it. It's not happening. You know, like an adequate lunch is not happening. The food rule, even though she came to me because she wants the food freedom, she wants to trust her body, she wants to be in touch with the hunger and fullness cues, doesn't matter. All of that chatter going on in there was still running the show. So let me tell you, this was my intervention for her. I said, this is what you're going to do. I said, lunch needs to be a minimum of 700 calories. I know, gasp, right? Like, here's Melissa suggesting a calorie count. Now look, again, this approach is very individualized. For this person, giving her a calorie goal is not something that was triggering. counting calories was not something that triggered any kind of eating disorder, disordered behavior. In fact, she found it to be the complete opposite. The suggestion of having at least 700 calories for lunch was, I'm not being hyperbolic when I say this, it was life-changing for her because it did two things. Number one, the structure of it, the goal of it, and the accountability of it completely erased all of the chatter and the noise in her brain that was preventing her from being able to just get a freaking lunch and be done with it. And number two, it was a nutrition recommendation that was appropriate to her actual nutrition needs. So with implementing this 700 calorie lunch, she felt nourished. And listen, when you're properly nourished, your brain is happy because it's not in like a survival mode of like, why am I starving? And that also quiets down the noise in your brain and you're able to think about and focus on other things. That, right, being the freedom that you want. You need to be adequately and properly nourished in order to get to that other side of the freedom that you want from the dieting world, both outside of your body and inside of your brain. It's adequate nourishment. And so in conclusion, the point being is that for a lot of you, systematic structure is going to be the thing that gets you there. Okay. So that is the lesson of the day. And before I end this, I'll just say one more thing. The structure and systems that are going to work for you can be radically different than they are from anyone else. I have another client, just again to illustrate my point and to offer perspective. I had her on a 900 calorie breakfast plan, okay? Because there was I'm not going to go into the details of it, but there was this huge mumble jumble in her brain about what's appropriate for breakfast, what's appropriate for lunch, this like weird snacking situation that was happening like throughout the hours of the morning. Her eventually realizing that like the breakfast that she was most satisfied with was a much larger breakfast that really set her up good for the day, but all of this noise in her head of like this or that, or is it good or is it bad? And I just said, listen, have 900 calories for breakfast and be done with it. Just do it. And again, life-changing because it took the noise out of her brain. And it was a funny story because she eventually, after a few weeks of having the 900 calories for breakfast, she was like, okay, you know what? This actually feels like a lot. And I feel better now. Like if I ever do want this amount of food, I realize it's okay. But to do it every day, there's something funky here and I got to switch things up. So we ended up switching things. But again, the point being the systematic structure of implementing something to directly challenge the food rules. Again, that's going to be the thing that gets you to the other side of the freedom that you want and that you're looking for. And structures and systems are not inherently bad. Again, I know like in the social media space, talking about a lot of the noise and the content on social media talks about how, you know, counting calories, measuring your food is like always bad. It's always disordered. And those are always the behaviors that we want to move away from. But I'm going to tell you something different. If you are coming into this process with a long history of disordered eating and disordered thoughts and behaviors and patterns, sometimes counting and measuring to make sure that you're getting enough is essential. There's no other way around. There's no other way to get you to that freedom. I mean, maybe for some people, I don't know. I don't want to say never ever. You know, maybe there are some people who are like, you know, they can snap their fingers and say, oh, you know, okay, I don't want food rules anymore. Fine, I'm done with them. And then they go on and they're, you know, they have their freedom. I don't know. I've never seen it, but then again, I probably wouldn't because, you know, if somebody's hiring a dietitian, it's because they're having trouble, right? So I don't maybe see those cases, although maybe it might happen. But I'm here to tell you that if that is not working for you, if this like snap of your finger, like, okay, I'm done dieting, I want my freedom, let's go have it. And if that's not working for you, this is why. Okay, a little bit of structure, a little bit of a systematic approach is the way to do it. Now, if you are ready for some one-on-one support through this process, I will leave the link in the show notes down below to apply to work with me. I do 4 months of counseling, weekly appointments, and I really help you structure. I really help you come up with a structure and a system to move through these rules in a very individualized, supportive way so that you can get to that other side of freedom. If you're in a position where you're like, you know, I can't do that right now. I don't have like the budget for it. I can't afford to hire a dietitian right now. What I would tell you in the meantime is to make a list of whatever food rules that you have. And maybe if you can, one by one, think about creating a system and a structure to challenge them every day and move through them. And maybe pick one at a time. You know, pick one to do for 6 weeks. Or if you feel up to it, like doing two at a time and do it for 6 weeks, right? So like if one of your food rules is like dessert is bad, I shouldn't have dessert. Try having a little dessert every night for 6 weeks and see how that changes. When you see it won't hurt you and actually you might really enjoy your life doing that, that hard rule that is taking over your life will start to go away. And that's the freedom. That's how you get the freedom. Okay, I will leave you with that for now. Thank you for tuning in and listening. And yeah, I'll see you on the next episode. All right, bye.